The commission investigating the 9/11 attack said in its final report last summer that the war on terror needed to put more emphasis on the battle of ideas. The 9/11 commission said it is not enough to pursue terrorists militarily. People in the Arab and Muslim worlds need to be persuaded that it's not in their interest to support terrorist groups. Still, the military story gets much of the attention in Iraq and elsewhere. The importance of the battle of ideas is proving to be a matter of debate, as NPR's Tom Gelton reports.
The U.S. military spends millions on what it calls strategic communication, public relations efforts to counteract anti-U.S. propaganda, for example. And Pentagon thinkers such as Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz seem convinced that the war on terrorism is, in part, a battle for hearts and minds.
This is an ideological as well as a physical struggle. We must do more than simply kill and capture terrorists.
Wolfowitz was speaking at a terrorism conference last September. That same month, the Defense Science Board, a Pentagon advisory group, echoed the 9/11 Commission in saying the U.S. government's strategic communication effort was in crisis and failing to challenge what the board said was a pervasive atmosphere of hostility toward the United States across the Muslim world. Nevertheless, for a variety of reasons, the so-called battle of ideas has actually been de-emphasized in the last 6 months. In Iraq, torn apart by a violent insurgency, military operations have had top priority. Here's how the commander of the Army's 1st Infantry Division, Major General John Batiste, described his unit's mission in mid-January during the run-up to national elections.
It's all about taking the fight to the enemy. It's all about taking the fight to the insurgent with intelligence-driven, deliberate combat operations to kill or capture the insurgent.
Given the need to establish security in Iraq, General Batiste's perspective was hard to dispute. But military theorist Harlan Ullman of the Center for Strategic and International Studies wants to see a broader view of the mission as well.
If you go after terrorists, you're going after them one at a time. Those are symptoms. We have to go after the causes.
The challenge in Iraq and elsewhere is to balance the combat mission with the struggle for hearts and minds. And it's not easy. This month, Marine Lieutenant General James Mattis, who commanded troops in Afghanistan and Iraq, created a stir when he told an audience in San Diego that in combat, it can actually be fun to shoot people. The Council on American-Islamic Relations promptly called on the Pentagon to discipline Mattis, but many others came to his defense, arguing that in the heat of battle, infantrymen must focus squarely on destroying the enemy. It was in the context of that truth that Mattis was speaking, his defenders say. Among them, Ralph Peters, a retired Army officer and military writer who was sitting next to Mattis when the general made his comments. A key purpose of military training, Peters says, is to prepare soldiers to fight instinctively, to engage an enemy without hesitation or fear.
If you start worrying about, gee, will I be hurt? Gee, will I be killed? Gee, what are the moral implications of all this? You'll be paralyzed and you will be killed or badly hurt and you will lose.
Virtually any combat veteran would agree. So would Harlan Ullman, a retired Navy captain. And yet, Ullman argues, the war in Iraq, even in its most intense moments, is a struggle with political dimensions.
If you take a shot, for example, and you happen to kill an innocent civilian, you have now made enemies for life. So this is not war in the sense that World War II was a war or Vietnam was a war where there are battle zones. You are dealing where you have to have an on and off switch, where in the one moment you may be engaged in a fierce firefight, but the next, you've got to deal with hearts and minds. So this is an extremely difficult situation.
If the hearts and minds struggle has been given short shrift in Iraq, it's possibly because of more pressing issues. The need to protect U.S. troops and facilities has made it harder for soldiers and Marines to interact normally with Iraqis. Also, the commander of U.S. forces in Iraq, General George Casey, has said the U.S. military is unpopular there to the extent it's seen as an occupation force. Rather than try to turn that image around through PR, Casey argues, more effort should go into training the Iraqi security forces so the U.S. troops can get out of the way. Finally, the importance of ideas in this war may simply be overstated. Lieutenant General Lance Smith, deputy head of the U.S. Central Command, told reporters earlier this month that some of the people attacking U.S. troops in Iraq may be doing it, in his words, for money.
You know, here's $200, here's an RPG, go out and, you know, shoot somebody on a coalition or something like that. Until we get the economic engine going in Iraq, we're going to continue having some problems and giving them an obvious recruiting base to recruit from.
Such examples suggest that in some cases too much can be made of the need to focus on ideology in fighting the war on terror. But some officials in the Pentagon go further, almost dismissing entirely the importance of efforts to change people's thinking. The Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations, Thomas O'Connell, told a defense conference this month that, in his opinion, fighting terrorists requires another approach.
We now are engaged in a test of wills rather than a battle of ideas. We talk about battles of ideas. Ideas are things that you have, most of you probably 20 or 30 good ideas a day. I might have one or two. But a test of wills refers back really to medieval times, where a test is a long ordeal. A will is something deep inside of you. And I think if we view our struggle as a test of wills, we'll get a much better azimuth on which to point our efforts. So if you take one thing away from this, take away test of wills as opposed to battle of ideas.
From this perspective, it may be a waste of time to try to get some people to change their minds. Instead, they must be seen as enemies to be worn down and beaten. Ralph Peters, who has written widely on the future of war, would agree. The war on terrorism, he argues, in the final analysis may come down not to a struggle for hearts and minds, but rather a battle of beliefs.
When you have a battle of beliefs, of the deepest soul-embedded convictions, then it's something else entirely. It's very important for people to realize that we're in a war that our enemies can't reason with us to convert to their way of thinking, and conversely, we cannot convert the hardcore terrorists.
But Harlan Ullman, who has also written widely on counterterrorism strategy, continues to argue that the thinking that underlies terrorism must be engaged rather than simply smashed.
If we leave those things unchallenged, if we don't take them on, we're never going to win the war of ideas. And if we don't win the war of ideas, we can never win the war on terror. You just can't kill everybody. You have to deal with the intellectual, with the psychological, and with the legitimate arguments that empower people like Osama bin Laden. It's just not there. These guys are a bunch of nuts who are going to die for Islam. There's much more there, and if you don't understand that, winning becomes exceedingly difficult.
The issue of when to see the war on terrorism as an intellectual or a physical struggle is one of the most important now facing U.S. policymakers. And commanders in the field and defense theorists alike agree it's a question that can't be answered just by considering how wars have ended in the past. Tom Gelton, NPR News, Washington.